Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
That part is 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
Welcome back to another Western Rookie Podcast episode. I'm your host, Brian Krebs, and I've got Tyler Jensen on the podcast tonight. So Tyler is an avid outdoorsman. I mean, I'm looking at some of the pictures you post, and it looks like you are an equal opportunity hunter. Any species that you get a tag for, looks like any weapon, you're just spending as much time out in the mountains as possible. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, if there's an opportunity to chase a species, whether I know how to do it or not, I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, so we were talking just a little bit in the green screen. You live in Montana. Were you born and raised in Montana?
Nope. I grew up on the East Coast. So I grew up in the Northeast, and then I joined the Army and got stationed over in Washington. And then I do HVAC for a living, so I got all my certifications in Washington. And I was like, I'll just buy a house here, make some good money. And then I lived about 45 minutes south of Seattle. And I worked in Seattle every day. And where I grew up compared to Seattle, it's just like polar opposites. I grew up in a small, like wooded area, like 7 towns, 1 high school, less than 1,000 kids, going to like, got a neighborhood full of like 10,000 people. And I did 3 years of that. And I was like, you know what? like, excuse my French, but fuck this. Like, I got to get out of the city. Like, get away. Like, yeah, the money's good, but like, it's just miserable being here. So ever since I was a little kid, I've always wanted to move to Montana. And, you know, I saved up a good bunch of money, bought a house, sold it. And I was like, now's the time to do it. So at 24, 25, I said, fuck it. We're going to Montana. And I sold everything I had and just, I never even visited Montana and bought a house. And the rest is history.
Oh, wow. How long ago was that? Like, how long have you been in Montana now?
So I moved in the winter, or yeah, I guess I moved October of 2018.
Okay.
And then,
so 5 years.
And, yeah. Yeah. 5 years, I think. I'm coming up on six.
Awesome. And so is a lot of the hunting that you're doing now, like I see antelope, mule deer, elk, bear, bison, which is super rad. Is a lot of it in your home state now? Like you're just staying in Montana and just using all of the opportunity Montana has, or do you still bounce around different states like Idaho, you know, Utah, Oregon?
No, I don't think I've posted anything. I think everything that I've had posted on the last 5 years has been Montana. And like, yes, I'd love to go to like Wyoming or mm-hmm. Idaho or even like Utah. But I get like anxiety because you do get so many general tags in Montana. I'm like, fuck, I got so many tags to fill here and like so much time wrapped up around here that I don't have time to drive down to Utah or even over to Idaho to chase them, you know, because it's unknown territory. So I don't really have the time to scout. Whether it's like I do here, we do camping trips in the summer and we just kind of scout our areas and set up cameras and kind of get a feel for what's going on in that area. But hopefully in the near future, I would love to go down to, actually, I'd really love to go up to Alaska, experience that once or twice, and then, you know, go to Wyoming, do an antelope hunt, something simple.
Yeah, the Wyoming antelope can be a good one to get fired off early, especially if you're doing archery. I know Montana archery antelope opens up pretty early as well, but, like, that's probably less pressure to, like, miss a few days of Montana antelope for Wyoming antelope versus, like, miss your rut elk season to go chase elk somewhere else and go from probably like near 100% odds down to like 10% odds and then spend, you know, instead of $30 for your tag, you're talking $700, you know, like nothing works out very well in that situation anymore.
Yeah, it's, and you hit it right on the head. Like you look at, as a resident of Montana, you get so many tags in there. I mean, to be honest with you, they're very cheap for a resident. Like if you move here, like I think my elk tag is like $20, like if yeah. a general tag, you know, and you can always get an over the counter elk tag too for cows. And that's another $20. So to go to Idaho or Wyoming or Utah and put in for these draws and have to spend like, you know, the whole trip would be thousands of dollars. You're like, I think I'll just keep my happy ass in Montana and just yeah. do my thing here.
I hear you, man. I mean, it does suck when we go to Montana, that tag price bites. I mean, I think it's like $890 by the time we get everything that we need to hunt elk in Montana. And you're like, Jesus, that's a lot. Even if you shoot one, you're still at $5 a pound for meat. But it's worth, I mean, it's the passion, right? So you do it. But I get it. I mean, Montana, I think Montana by far has the most resident hunting opportunity out of any state. I mean, just when you stack up the species, the season dates, the tag costs, the amount of public land, I mean, there's a lot of states out there that have great resident hunting, but man, would it be hard. Maybe Alaska would be the one where you could argue is better than Montana, but then you got to put up with being an Alaska resident. So,
yeah. And like Alaska too, you know, people fail to realize like when you go out of state, let's say you fly to Alaska, right? Like that's pretty much the only way unless you really want to make the road trip to Alaska, going through Canada, all that bullshit. Let's say you kill something up there. Like you got to get it home somehow. So like, yeah, like tags cost a lot. The flight get up there costs a lot. Okay. So now you're coming back with like a moose or a caribou yeah. or like a bear. And you're like, dang, that's going to be another, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred, maybe $800 to just get your meat that you've got up there. So it's not always about the money, of course, because the experience of hunting Alaska and getting a moose or caribou, like obviously we don't have caribou down here, but it's just, you got to think about those things. You know, you do shoot yeah. one. Like if you are successful, next thing you know, you're like, holy shit, I got to spend this amount of money to get it back, and then customs and whatever it may be. It's, I don't know. Part of me wants to do it. The other part of me is just like, ah, oh, just go out my backyard a couple miles down the road and there's a million acres of public land. I'll just go hunt that.
Yeah. The moose thing would be probably the one, because it's still like a once in a lifetime draw in Montana for moose. So if you, you know, depending on how long you want to wait, I mean, that could be the one reason why you would maybe go to like Canada or Alaska. But yeah, other than that, I mean, you got it. It's pretty much set in Montana. And for the listeners, you're not only trying to fill however many tags you have in your household. You have, like, it looks like double everything. Double the deer tags, yep. Double the elk tags, double the bear tags, because your wife looks like she loves hunting just as much, or maybe even more than you.
Yeah, I mean, she's born and raised in Montana, and I will say this, like, we kind of talked about it earlier, like, I don't see why a lot of people don't hunt with their significant others, but then I remember, like, before I met her, you know, you have a girlfriend or wherever it may be, and they're like, I want to go out hunting, and they're like, I want to try it, and you get, like, excited. You're like, yeah, this, like, this will be fun, you know? But it seems like a lot of relationships, like the, and I don't want to sound like sexist, but like the female perspective, it's like they don't understand the grind for the most part, where they're like, I think in my scenario or my experience, it's like they just want to go out and like have fun, but they don't understand, like, there's tactics to it. There's, you got to be quiet, there's scent, like, and it's not just, oh, let's go for a little hike in the woods. It's like, oh, you see that mountain over there? We got to get up and over that. And that's where I believe the elk are going to be. And they may not be there. And so to find somebody who is just passionate about it, if not more than I am, and then willing to just go into these hell holes, this poor girl, that I, these fucking miserable hell holes I bring her into. And she's like, just happy as a clam. I'm just, yeah, let's go. Like, it is, I think it's rare. And it's like, I mean, I'm super excited and happy to have it.
Yeah, I do feel like, that, to be fair to the female perspective, though, when we come back from an elk hunt, like, oh, it was awesome, we saw this many bulls, and this happened, and then that, you know, my buddy did this, and, you know, then we shot one, and we had a bonfire at camp. You never tell, like, you only tell the highlight stories. You never tell the lowlight stories, I guess would be the opposite of that, but, like, yeah, for 3 days we hiked our ass off and didn't see a damn thing. We were exhausted. I got wet feet. I ran out of food. It rained. I got super, like, we don't, like, go into detail. We might say, like, yeah, it rained the first day. But, yeah, then this other amazing story happened. And so the person on the other side of that, if they're not a hunter, they're just hearing, like, oh, you know, they saw the pictures. Oh, that's so beautiful. They saw the, they heard the stories, and they got so excited about it. They didn't realize you hiked your ass off and sweated through all your clothes to get up there before light to take that picture that you sent back home. And so I think there could be a huge mismatch of, like, how it gets explained versus what it's actually like. And you bring that person out there that has no clue, and they're like, oh, I thought you just kind of, like, drove to the top of the mountain.
No, I agree. And I think that's just, like, kind of how dudes, like, explain stuff. Like, we're just, we don't explain to them. Like, you're saying, like, it was shitty for the first 5 days. Like, it was, one, it was super hot, didn't hear a single bugle. Or, like, I don't know, like, it was freezing cold, we were miserable, like, it sucked, but then you do kill one, because it's miserable, and it's cold, and it's, like, nobody else is out there, and, like, that's where they're gonna be, is when it's miserable and cold, and then you're, like, oh my god, we killed one, and it was beautiful, like, whether it was a raghorn or whatever, but, like, the whole point of being out there is because you're trying to kill one of these animals, and when you do, you're, like, oh, like, I would 100%, like, even if it was the worst 5 days of your life, if you kill one, you're like, oh, I would 100% do it again. Like, don't even care.
Yeah, I'd never think about it. I mean, I've shot some bulls before. One was a really easy pack out. Well, I guess both of them are pretty easy. But one was, like, I was hunting solo in the Alpine at, like, 12,000 feet, and I shot him at last light. And I didn't even think about, like, the fact that I'm going to be quartering this elk and, like, shuttling it down to the road until 2 a.m. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Which, but if you, like, think about that ahead, it's like, if that's how you explained it, like, yeah, you're gonna be by yourself, it's gonna be cold, you're gonna hear a lot of weird noises in the woods, and you're gonna be quartering this until 2 a.m. in the dark, you're like, yeah, I don't know if that's my thing.
I'll stay at camp. No, I agree. Like, there's a,
yeah,
like, I think there's, like a psychotic portion to, like, Western hunting in a way, because, like, you do put yourself in a lot of situations where, like you said, you 2 in the morning, you just finished hunting. It's not that you just showed up at you know, 8 o'clock at night, shot a bull, and you're like, okay, that's the day. Like, now we get the work. It's like you started the day at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You hiked off all day, shot it last night, and then by yourself, you know, scun up and bagged this, whatever, an elk, like 800 pound elk.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, sick. I got to put this on my back and then get down to the road in the pitch dark where there are wolves and cats and bears. And you're like, yeah, I think we're all a little fucking crazy at the end of the day. You're like, if you tell anybody that who's from the city, they're like, why the fuck would you do that? You're like, I don't know, because it sounds fun. Like, it just, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh, it was a blast. And they're like, what? Yeah. Like, hunting grizzly country. Like, you, I don't know, it's kind of exhilarating. You know, every day you can be your last.
Yeah, I mean, God, I try not to hunt as much grizzly country, you know, but in Montana, especially this year, there have been a ton of reports, like, they're in, you know, drainages in Missoula, which is like not unheard of, but like not as common. And then even in the Bitterroot, like when I first moved here, people were like, oh, there's no grizzlies in the Bitterroot. First year I was here, I ran into one. I was like, that's not a black bear. That's fuck that thing.
Yeah. So, that guy's big. Yeah. It can definitely depend on how, because you want to be careful. It's not like you want to go too like realistic and like pessimistic about explaining what it's like. You don't want to go too far. You don't want to like romanticize it too much and give like your significant other an unrealistic expectation of like how fun and nice it is. Like, it's not type one fun. Antelope hunting's type one fun. Elk hunting's not.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to draw the line. But you also don't want to be like, yeah, elk hunting is brutal. It sucks. Every day sucks unless you shoot one, and then it really sucks. Because then, you know, then they're gonna be like, well, if it's like that, I don't want to go at all. So you got to like,
yeah, you're right.
You got to be careful if you really want to hunt with your wife. This episode is brought to you by Steelhead Outdoors. Now, everyone knows that Steelhead Outdoor safes are the only American-made fire-insulated modular safes on the market. But you might not know that Steelhead Outdoors also carries a full line of handgun lockers, pistol boxes, and even custom vault doors. So whether you're looking for a locker to store your concealed carry when you walk in the front door, or a pistol box to mount underneath your nightstand, or even if you're looking to secure an entire doorway in your home and create a safe room, Steelhead Outdoors has a solution for you. You can tell the guys over at Steelhead are gun owners because they have the gun owner in mind when they design their products. Their handgun lockers are just the right size to store modern-day handguns with lasers, optics, double-stack magazines, and even a backup gun, while their pistol boxes are the perfect size to mount underneath your bed, your nightstand, or even in your vehicle. And when it comes to a custom vault door, they have designed a panic lock and emergency release so you can easily lock and unlock your vault door completely from the inside, meaning you are always safe but never trapped inside. Go to steelheadoutdoors.com to check out all of their security options and pick the right one for you. One day. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say your wife probably hunted before she met you.
Mm-hmm. She grew up hunting. Like, yeah. Her dad was a huge advocate in hunting. Like, obviously, like, born and raised in Montana, it's pretty rare that you meet somebody who's, like, from Montana who's never hunted. Like, they've at least done it once. And with her dad really, like, instilled it in her and, like, brought her around, even, like, took the time, you know, when they're younger to, like, bring her out in the mountains. Like, she was hunting elk with her dad when she was little. And so just like that exposure at a young age, and I'm sure they got successful sometimes and didn't, but just like having that fun time with, like, one, your dad, and two, like, out in the woods sharing a passion, I think it, you know, for like all of us, it just gets you hooked. And so she's been hunting, I mean, way before she met me. And then, you know, we hunted together one time, or, you know, we got together, we started hunting, and you always have that, like, oh, am I going to have to, I talked about this on other podcasts too. Like, am I going to have to baby? Am I going to have to, like, step my, you know, cause like I'm a grown man, I can go through the woods quicker, I'm stronger, faster, whatever it may be. Am I going to have to, like, dull down kind of how I hunt with her? But it has been like, no, don't even skip a beat. Like, she's right there next to me. I don't have to, like, slow down. Her tactics and my tactics are pretty similar, so I'm like, okay, there's a bull, like, we should do this, we play the, like, she knows so much about the woods that I don't have to, like, explain it, which is super nice. I mean, I'm spoiled in a way that, like, I don't have to be like, oh, we have to go this way because of the wind, or I don't know. It just makes it a hell of a lot easier, and just it's super enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, I think, something a lot of people, you hear, you know what's interesting? You hear two different responses. Some guys will be like, oh, I would, you know, I would love to have a wife like yours, or, you know, whoever, if especially if they're speaking to you, they might be like, oh, I'd love to have a wife that hunts as much as yours does or loves hunting as much as, you know, do it. And then you get the other guy that's like, oh, no, I do not want to hunt with my wife. Like, that's my time. And I'm like, well, then why'd you marry her if you don't want to spend time? Like, if you want to get away for a week at a time, like, I don't feel like you might have married the wrong person.
Dude, I agree with that because, like, hunting has been a huge part of my life, like hunting the East Coast. Like, I grew up in New Hampshire, obviously. So, like, I hunted my whole life ever since I was a little kid. And then, like, to be with somebody that doesn't even want to, like, I don't know, it doesn't make you feel good if she's like, no, I don't want to go. Or, like, I just can't imagine being with somebody and being like, oh, I don't want her to go. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, every time I get offered to go to, like, a buddy texted me the other day, he's like, hey, you want to come on this like snow goose hunt in South Dakota? And I was like, yeah. So I texted her. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go to, like, I just got offered to go on this snow goose hunt. And like her, she, like the first thing she said was just like, can I come? And I was like, well, fuck yeah. Like, but you know, it's just, it makes it easier. Cause anytime we talk about going somewhere hunting, if it's a us thing, there's no like, hey babe, I was hoping I can get off this weekend and not do like fall festival stuff and go hunting. She's like, what are we doing this weekend? And yeah. I was like, we're going hunting. She's like, good. Like, I haven't planned anything. Like, she knows. So it's, I guess it takes a fight out of like, I don't know. You see that in most relationships on social media and their jokes. Like, can I go out this weekend? And the wife's like, no, we got apple picking or some bullshit. Like, for me, I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, it sounds like you follow the Nomadic Outdoorsman. He's a good buddy of mine and used to lead this podcast. But him and his wife post a lot of content like that because it's clickbaity. When he asks his wife for permission to hunt, then you get all the people coming. If you need permission, you know, like if you need to ask your wife for permission to hunt, you should probably like wearing the pants or whatever, wear the pants in your relationship. You've heard it all, but you're right. I mean, if both love the exact same thing, then it's very easy to get on the same page with what you want to do on your free time.
Yeah, it is super nice. And like, I don't know. It's just, like, I'm just spoiled in a way. I know I've said that before, but it's so much fun just because, like, I know the weekends are filled with what I love to do with the person I love the most and what she loves to do the most. So it's just, it's a win-win in all categories, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. So I've noticed you had a picture on your Instagram with a small child, and your wife's Instagram has a picture with an announcement. So as I assume that means the small child was yours.
So we are now pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
Well, I don't have any kids. I just have dogs, but not yet. But we're pregnant. I tell everybody that I'm pregnant. I'm like, I'm pregnant. And come April 2024, we will be introducing a baby girl to the family, and we are terrified and excited and scared, and it's our first kid. So like, you're always, I mean, I obviously I don't have kids, I don't know what to expect, but there's a part of it where I'm excited to like have a daughter and kind of raise her the way that I was raised for the outdoors, and like her as well, you know, my fiance, and just be like, hey, this is my time to teach you, like, this is what we do. And I'm excited for that portion of just like teaching a little girl that's mine to love and respect the outdoors.
Well, that's super exciting. It's changing my question a little bit because I didn't check dates. I just saw that the pin was posted, or the post was pinned, and so I just figured it was a little older, and I thought the baby was yours. It looks, maybe it was family member or something. But I was going to ask, how has that changed? Because, you know, it's obviously going to change a little bit. I mean, when you have like an infant, I'm assuming you're not going to both be able to hunt the same time. So that's,
yeah. So it's so funny because like when we found out, you know, you do the math in your head, you're like, okay, 9 months, it should put us around April. All right. Late April, turkey and spring bear have already started. Like, that's like what goes through my mind as a dude, you know. I'm not like, yes, I'm excited, I'm having a kid, but also it's like, all right,
you're just starting to think through what plans are going to look like. And yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny because I'll be like, so you're not gonna really need me around the house come like May, because like I'm pretty much useless when it comes to the child, because she wants nothing to do with me, and she just gives me like the death stare, like, how dare you? Like, you will be here to support me, but I'm sure, you know, she'll. I think it'll be more like, I'll probably want to stay around the house more, especially if I have a kid, just because like, you know, it's a child and I'm excited. But like, maybe I'll just annoy her enough to where she's like, go bear hunting or something. Like, get away from me. And I'm like, sick. I'm out of here.
I don't know if I would bank on that plan, but you do you, man. You do you, Tyler. It'd be whatever you find out. Let me know how it works. But well, in a real sense, like, how much of your, you know, average hunting is, since you live so close to like endless opportunity, how much of it is like true day hunting, or versus like maybe elk camp is where you go and set up like a wall tent for a week? You know, is there opportunity where you can just get out for like a day and like, hey, you know, maybe an in-law's in town and, you know, they're going to be by the house, so you can go out for an afternoon or a day hunting and be home?
Yeah. I mean, I live in the Bitterroot Valley. So like, less, I would say 2 miles from me is like a BMA that holds elk on it. You know, they kind of pass through.
Yeah.
So like, it's like, it's not going to be like a weird thing where I'm like, hey, I'm just going to go sit real quick with my bow, a couple of whitetail spots, or I'm going to go bring the rifle up real quick to the top of the mountain, just see what I can see. And even with her, like, there's spots where we could just like drive and I can glass to, and if it like worst comes to worst, I'm like, hey, you should go shoot that elk, or you should go shoot that deer. Like, I'll watch the kid. And then, if we kill it or whatever, like, we'll have a backpack for the kid, we'll bundle it up, and then like somebody will just carry the kid around and the other person will just pack the meat out. Like, we've already talked about like day hunts and like what'll happen.
Yeah.
And we have like, there's a lot of people that I see on social media that like have their little ones out there like antelope hunting and like doing, you know, cool stuff. And so I don't think it's obviously going to change with like the freedoms that we have now, but I think that there's just going to be different ways around it, where it's just like, yeah, we're going to go out. We may not be able to go out like a 10-day elk hunt, but there'll be plenty of opportunities to notch tags and have fun as a family.
Yeah, well, I've got some close personal friends that they just had their second child, but when they had their first child, I mean, they were kind of the same way, more in the east whitetail hunting, but like hunting every day in the fall and just always in the woods, and they hunted right up through like the entire pregnancy. And then that first, I think their first baby was like an early spring baby, like a March, April. And that fall, they were like hunting with the baby, especially earlier season. Later in the season, they had like grandma and grandpa watch. But I mean, they still hunted a lot. I'm sure it felt like a huge impact for them for their first child. Obviously, things did change, but it happens. And I had Sean Curtis from Wyoming. I don't know if you follow Sean, but he makes it a point to bring his entire family out with him for opening archery elk. And he's like, I know we're going to blow almost, like, we got three kids and my wife. Like, we're not doing spot and stock here. But I'm pretty sure he said that he shot a bull with his, like, one of his youngest daughters in, like, a backpack, you know, child carrier, and shot a bull with her, like, on his back. So, pretty cool. I mean, it really is pretty cool. But he just said, I love the tradition of bringing my entire family out for archery elk. And, you know, my kids are starting to get old enough where they can blow a bugle tube. And, like, it's just fun. I like it, even though we hardly ever shoot anything because there's five of us. But he said that's just, like, what he looks forward to the most now.
Yeah, I think it, like, again, I just think it's, you know, you have a kid and there are going to be things that change. But, like, for me, like, there were things that changed when I used to hunt by myself compared to when I met my now fiance. Like, I would be the most minimal dude. Like, when it comes to like elk hunting for 10 days by myself, I would pack like some Peak refuel meals. And then like, at night I just have like a turkey sandwich and I buy a bunch of turkey meat. And like, sometimes I would just eat turkey and mustard. Like, but now that she's around, it's like, oh, she's already planned out like all the meals that we need, like has made like breakfast burrito, like she's on top of it. So it's like a different thing. Like, there's more stuff that we need now that we're hunting together, because she's like, no, we're not just going to sleep on fucking sleeping bags on the ground. And I'm like, why? We're going to be fine. She's like, no, you're an idiot. We're going to, you know, we're going to buy a camper. We're going to do this, do that. I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds better. And so I think with a kid, same thing. Like, you know, if you don't like killing an animal is what obviously you're out there for, but to have those stories, like when you get older, like I remember when I was hunting with dad, you know, hopefully you have grandkids and like, yeah, dad took me out when I was 4 years old and I watched him call in a bull. And like, I think those are just memories that like, yeah, you may not have killed it, but they'll just be like heritage stories about how cool it was when you were little and dad was shot a whitetail or called in a bull or put a stalk on a bear. I just think everything's just going to be different.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some truth in that. For sure. And it'll get, I mean, it'll change. I mean, imagine like 15 years from now, you're going to be bringing your 14-year-old potential. I mean, hopefully she likes hunting, but like, that's going to be a completely different thing. I mean, that's going to be like, as much as you love hunting with your fiance now, I mean, imagine hunting with your fiance and your daughter, or your, obviously your wife 14 years from now and your daughter, you know, it's just going to be like, yeah, you know, even more special to share, you know, the same passion with just more people that you love. And so I think it's, you know, it's kind of a short-term window of, yeah, this is going to impact our life for, like, really impact it for 5 years and then mildly impact it for the next 10. But after that, once, you know, your daughter gets a driver's license, like, so now you're not, like, having to do the sports things or, you know what I mean? She's starting to get more independent. Now she wants to come with. She can, you know, pack out. Maybe she's not packing out a you know, a 370 bull rear quarter, but maybe she's doing like a back strap and a tenderloin or a front shoulder. Like, you know what I mean? Like, eventually you're going to get to the point where it's the opposite of a burden. It's actually like helping you enjoy it more.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, I've always enjoyed like watching my fiance kill stuff. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, when, whether it's her or like a buddy that like, I had the Hunt Lift Eat guys come out last year for a deer hunt. Okay. And I got to watch like a couple of them like shoot deer, and like, you know, they paid all this money to come out to Montana and they worked really hard to like, one, get out here, and then two, like hunt. And when you see guys like that get successful, you're just pumped. Like, and I didn't even fire a round that weekend, and I was just like in the mountains with them, like just stupid happy. And like I don't know, I just get super excited when like the homies kill shit, and like, it's just a good time for everyone. And so I think that's what's going to happen with like my daughter. Hopefully, I can't imagine she won't like hunting, but you know, to watch her shoot her first deer or elk, and then just like, I'm sure I'll cry like a little bitch. I don't know. Like, I'll just be excited. Like, I love watching people be successful in the woods, because it's like a passion of ours.
Yeah.
And so like, I understand the feeling of shooting your first deer. I understand the feeling of shooting your first bull. Like,
if you're looking forward to another fall of hunting big bucks, but you're tired of freezing your tail off or getting busted by does, head over to maverickhunting.com and check out their Maverick and Booner blinds. Both series are incredibly easy to set up and get out in the woods. I set up two of the 6-panel blinds in the same week. And whether your favorite spot is on a field edge or way back in the sanctuary, you can have a hard-sided blind in your favorite spot this season. Keep the elements out and your scent in with a Maverick hunting blind. The best part is Maverick blinds ship out of their factory in just 1 or 2 days, which means you still have plenty of time to get a comfortable blind set up before the cold weather arrives and those big bucks are cruising through your spots. Go to maverickhunting.com and use the code WESTERNROOKIE, that's one word, to save 10%. That's right, 10% on your Maverick hunting blinds.
It's like the highest of highs. Like, you can't. It's the greatest thing ever. And then to be like, oh, my daughter did it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah. My brother's got kids now that he's quite a bit older than me, but he's got some kids now that are that age. Like, his daughter's in college, obviously, you know, pretty much fully independent. His sons are just getting their learner's permits, about to get their driver's license. And so, and they're just hunting fools. I mean, they will like ask to go scout ducks before school. And so he's kind of said the same thing. Like, he would way rather watch his kids shoot animals than him. And I was the same way. I mean, I watched my wife now when we were dating, I brought her in a tree stand, decked her out in all of my spare camo. Mine, like, you like, she's 5'4" and I'm 6'2". So she's like rolling up sleeves and rolling up pant legs and looks like the Michelin man with all this huge clothing. But she shot her first deer opening day of the first season I brought her out for gun season. Dropped it in its tracks, freehand. So she's left-handed, and we're in shotgun zone. So we shoot like rifled slugs or rifled barrel slug guns. But my shotgun's a fully automatic, or not fully automatic, semi-automatic. But so the gat, I mean, it's, you know, a right-handed automatic shotgun, so they eject out the side. Well, she's left-handed, so it's like right in front of her face. They're injecting like in front of her eyes, and she's shooting freehand with this shotgun that's too big for her and just drops it right in her tracks. And a nice little buck. And so I was like more excited. I feel like I was more excited for her than she was. I was in the, I hung a second tree stand. So I'm like kind of over her shoulder in my own tree stand. Like, yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's like, it is the greatest feeling, especially like to have somebody like your girlfriend or fiance, like kill shit. Especially if, like in your instance, like, I don't know, like your wife didn't grow up hunting or like didn't do it when she was younger.
So her dad is a hunter. For sure. Mm-hmm. Like a lifelong hunter, just hunted in a different way, more like hunted traditional like deer camp for gun season. And then maybe would go to his buddy's place to hunt a few times here and there. But so like when I grew up, my parents in my family, I guess in general, just very blessed. I grew up with like 650 acres of like private land in Minnesota to hunt between what we owned and what like our next extended family owned, but it was all like exclusive access. And so we were like, every weekend, like Saturday, Sunday, all day long, we're pheasant hunting, deer hunting. Just like that's what that like that's was our life versus like just someone that does it when they can. And so she hunted a little bit with her dad. They did a little bit of bow hunting. She had a bow already, but she had never shot anything. Public land, like where they live, just is not a great, I mean, it's not the public land you're thinking of in the Bitterroot Valley, I'll tell you that much for free. So it was kind of just challenging. And then she dropped it to go to pharmacy school for a long time until she met me. I just drug her along. She probably just wanted to hang out and go on dates. And I'm like, well, we can go on a blind date. And she was a date in the blind. I think she watched me kill a doe with a bow. And then that same season, she shot her first buck with a gun. And then slowly, just I think being a part of me, like how much a part of my life hunting is, got her more and more into it. And to the point where like she shot her bow this year and she's like, man, this thing's like old. And I'm like, hey, since you shot that, let's just like go to the archery store and you can just shoot a new one and just see what you like. But I kind of knew what would happen as soon as she shoots like a brand new Hoyt. And so sure enough, we walked out with a brand new bow and I was super excited. I was more excited for her new bow than if I would have got a new bow. And so she's been shooting that, and she wanted to shoot the – we just bought a 40-acre farm here, and so we live on it now. And so she's been wanting to shoot the first deer. All summer long, she's telling me, like, I'm going to shoot the first deer. I'm going to shoot the first deer. And she wanted to shoot it with her brand-new bow, which didn't happen. But she did shoot the first deer on the new farm. So
that's awesome.
She's got that win in the ball cap. So, yeah, she's getting more and more into it. Now she wants to do the Western hunting thing. Now, 'cause she loves hiking, and she used to, like, backpack, like, truly backpack camp and hike before she met me. So I think it would be kind of an interesting like mix between that and hunting to like do a couple of backpack hunts, like maybe a backpack deer hunt. No one really backpack hunts antelope. So, and I don't think backpack elk hunting is the greatest launch into Western hunting. I think there's better stepping stones to go through first.
I think so. I think like the biggest misconception, and I was guilty of this too, like people coming from the East Coast, and they go to these like big Western states and they're like, oh yeah, like I've never Western hunted before, but like I'm going to do a 10-day backpack, like bivy hunt.
Yeah.
And they never make it 10 days. And like, it's tough, man. Like there are things coming from like an East Coast state where you're like, oh shit, I don't have this. Or like, this would have been nice. And so, you know, you're fucking 5-6 miles in bivied up and you're like, fuck this, like it sucks. Sometimes it sucks and it's just tough. You're like, oh, this is not fun.
Yeah, weather and season can play a big role. You know, we backpacked. Well, I talk about that all the time, like that exact topic. So, and I'm really curious to hear what you think. So I'm not by any means like a Jake Clark, you know, world's best elk guide, but I've done it every year for, you know, since I got out of college. I've done some other hunts. I post on Instagram. Now I obviously do the podcast. Like, so people know that I do it. And sometimes just like the fact that I do it is enough for them to ask me advice because maybe they've never done it, right? So it's like, okay, you don't, I'm not looking for the best Western hunter's advice. I just know you did it. I want to get it. So I'll get questions and I'll get someone that comes up and be like, hey, I'm doing, it'll be funny. It'll be like, hey, do you prefer like a jet boil or an MSR? And I'm like, well, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm doing a 14-day backpack hunt. I'm like, 14-day? Have you ever like gone hunted? No, this is my first elk hunt, me and my dad. And I'm like, well, you're asking a very deep, like, I feel like we've glossed over a bunch of things to get to what's better, an MSR or a jet boil. By the way, either one probably be fine. But I'm just like, I'm torn between like being realistic with them and trying to like help level set their expectations or just like not coming off as an asshole and be like, yeah, good luck. I'd get the jet boil.
I don't know. I'm the same way. Like, I think if somebody came to me and was like, hey, I'm doing this 14-day hunt. And again, you're like, well, have you done this before? And they're like, no, it's my first hunt. I was just like, I think you're, not to be disrespectful, but I think you're biting off more than you can chew. Like, have you ever even camped in your backyard or in the woods for 14 days? Not hunting, not hiking around, just camp for 14 days. Like, even that's miserable. Like, you fail to realize, like, all the amenities that you don't have.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're going to stink. You're going to be gross. You're going to be like, you're not packing in filet mignons or chicken breasts or whatever. Like, you're eating dehydrated food, which I think they're good. But after 14 days of it, you're like, fuck these things, dude. Get me something that's actually worth it. So I think the biggest mistake when it comes from like guys who've never Western hunted is that they plan these massive hunts that they've never done.
Yeah.
And they bite off more than they can chew. And then next thing you know, they're like, oh, we packed out day three and hunted somewhere else from the road, which is fine.
Yeah. I would actually prefer that they start that way. And so I'm like very opinionated about the topic in general, like talking to you or just say, like, I will say, like, I think anyone that wants to go from zero to a 14 day is going to fail, you know, unless you shoot your outcome like the first 3 days, you're not. But when someone comes up to me and asks me, I'll be like, well, if you want to know, like, I've done a couple things I can tell you about, like, my experiences. I never say, like, you're not going to do this because the people just, you know, the walls shoot up. But I'll tell them, like, hey, I did that solo alpine hunt in Colorado. It wasn't even a backpack hunt. Like, I was base camping, and then a storm rolled in. I'm by myself. I had to break down camp. Now I'm sleeping in the back of my truck because we had, you know, a foot of snow. Even just like not talking to people, like shitty cell phone reception. So you're bored. You can't text your girlfriend. You can't text your dad. You know, yeah, you can go down to Subway and get a sandwich, but that's not really like, if you're a social person, like if you're an extrovert, like I am, like that is not, you know, after like 5 days of basically not talking to anybody, like the mental challenge is there. You quit eating. All of a sudden now you're cramping up. I'm like, dude, it's tough. Like I decided I don't think I have what it takes to be a solo out of state elk hunter. Like, it just wasn't that much fun. And I shot a 6x7. Like I shot a big bull, and it's just like, I don't know if I want to do that again. Like, I don't know if it's worth it to me to do all of that by yourself, at least not right now.
Well, again, yeah. I mean, it's just like, people have these expectations of like how it's going to go, and they don't think of like the worst case scenarios. And like, honestly, worst case scenario would be if you fucking killed one, because now you got it. Like, skinning a bull by yourself in the middle of nowhere is hard. Like, I did mine last year and it sucked. And I was like, you know, I shot my bull at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And by the time help came up, like, they drove 2.5 hours and then they hiked like an hour up. By the time they got there, like, I had just gotten done, and it was probably, I don't know, probably close to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's like, and I was like a quarter mile from a gated road. So it was like, thank fucking God. Like, I killed this bull and now we can pack it out to the road and just like walk this gated road down with snow. But if you're up 12,000 feet and you kill one and you're like, oh shit, base camp is like 4,000 feet lower. Like, that is not going to be a good time.
No, I was super lucky too. I only had to pack them out a few hundred yards and then I could get to a old gold mining road that was still good enough to get my truck up, but it's not the kind of road I would take unless I had to pack an elk out. Like, it was a great four-wheeler road. It was not a great pickup road. But it worked. Yeah. I got my elk to that. But yeah, I mean, I shot him last light. I think it was like 7 p.m. in that unit. You know, I watched him drop, so that obviously huge help there without having to like track him and not knowing like, do I wait an hour? Like, what's the deal? Because that would have just backed up everything. But yeah, it took me from 7 to 11 to quarter that bull. I saved the hide for a shoulder mount. Like, it took 4 hours. Like, I've quartered a lot of elk, probably not as many as you because you live in God's country, but it's easy when you have someone to hold the leg and, hey, put some pressure on this. I'm going to pop this joint, you know. It's not easy when you're trying to, like, put it on your shoulder and stand up and, you know, cut and not cut your hand and do all, like you said, it's, yeah, worst case. Well, that's not truly worst case scenario, but, like, best case scenario is more on comfort. Worst case scenario is you don't find out it's snowing ahead of time and break down your camp, and now you're stranded up there and your truck battery dies and, like, you're screwed. Like, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of people that fantasize about Western hunting, and they should. It's fun. Like, it is a ton of fun, and it's a new experience. And even if you kill anything or not, like, some of the views that you see from the tops of the mountains, you're like,
yeah,
it's not like hiking trails. You know, you're like, you're beating through the woods, and you get up on this outlook, and you're like, holy shit, like, how pretty it is up here. And like,
yeah,
I wonder how many people have stood right here. You know, it's like, that's what's always in my mind. Like, I've always wondered how many people have stood on, like, cause I've been in some really deep shitholes, like way out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like standing on this peak and I'm like, I wonder how many people have actually hiked up here. Like, is it 1,000? Is it 4? You know, but I think people need to kind of police themselves, I guess, and just be like, hey, what are my abilities when it comes to being in the woods for that long? And do I know them? And like, if worst case scenario happens, do I know how to survive?
Yeah.
You know, if you're up on the mountains and it's fucking a blizzard rolls through, like, do you know how to make a quick shelter and a quick fire? And so that way you can like wait out the storm. And then do you know how to like boil water? I mean, I don't know. I just think a lot of people have, like, I'm sure it happens every year. People get out there and they get hurt and they're fucked. And
yeah.
They either die or,
well, there's
pay $1 million for helicopter retrieval. Like, who knows?
Unfortunately, there was a guy in our elk camp this year. Or not in our elk camp, but like we drove by and the signs were still up of like, hey, missing person. It was a guy that was scouting elk and 79 years old. He texted his wife like, hey, I'm going to be home in a half hour. Like, I'm a half hour. He said, I'm a half hour from the truck or the road. I can't remember which one. And then I'll be home. Never saw him again. I mean, it was like going on like 2-3 weeks when we got there and the signs were still up. Like, they still haven't found this guy. And it was like a highly populated area, unfortunately, for us. I mean, there was... It's not like he was in the boonies. Like, he was on the same mountain as a ski resort. Like, the missing signs are throughout the ski resort, and they still can't find him. I mean, it's just very, like, shit happens. Like, there's a reason the saying is, like, things are about to get Western.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it happens. And, like, a lot of people don't, I always carry, like, an InReach with me.
Yeah.
I make sure it's fully charged before I go. And so, like, you know, if I were to fucking fall and snap my femur, like, I can hit the SOS button. And
well, you'd almost have to, because you're going to bleed out before you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I would say people need to be cautious when they bite off more than they can chew. When it comes like, oh, I'm going to do a fucking 12-day, you know, hunt or a 14-day hunt out in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, okay, but just be careful. Like, you've never done it before. So like, maybe do 3-4 days. Come back to the truck, kind of reassess, maybe do another 3-4 days, like break it up a little bit. But
yeah,
more power to them. It's the United States of America. Have at it. Do whatever you want. Like, good luck.
Yeah, I have like a hierarchy that I would push. Like, if someone asked me, like, hey, give me your like unbiased opinion, like just give it to me. Don't filter it. You know, instead of like saying, oh, you shouldn't do it, because we kind of railed on that for a little bit, but. Instead, I would say, hey, if you just want to get out, you just want to start hunting the West, you think this is something you're going to want to do the rest of your life, go on an antelope hunt first. Go on a rifle antelope hunt. Go find a tag in Wyoming with public land. I mean, I use Go Hunt. A lot of people use it. You might not need it if you're an in-state. You just hunt in Montana. But, like, go get Go Hunt. Go sign up. Go pick a unit that you can draw. You might need a year of points, whatever. Go on a rifle antelope hunt. Find a buddy that you like, that you've kind of, you know, maybe butted heads with, like someone you know you can get along with if shit does hit the fan. and go on an antelope hunt and try that and see what you think. It's, I mean, that's as fun as it gets. Like, it's as easy and as fun as it gets. And if you like that, then go on a mule deer hunt. Go on a rifle mule deer hunt, or maybe a West River whitetail hunt, or an archery mule deer hunt. Early season, usually pretty good weather, dry, you know, lots of deer, lots of encounters. You're probably not going to shoot anything unless you know how to spot and stalk, but you're going to have fun. You know, do that a year or two. Maybe do antelope and a mule deer. And then, like, I don't know, year three, four, go on an archery elk hunt. Still nice weather, you know, get some, you know, you got this buddy you've been hunting with a while, like, things are working. Now you go on, like, an archery elk hunt, you kind of learn, maybe you spike out a day or two, right? And you build some more experience. You, hopefully you're successful. You feel what it's like to pack a bull 3 miles out of the shit, you know? And then, yeah, like, maybe then you start doing, like, some of these bigger hunts. For me, for some reason, I think archery elk is easier than rifle elk. Because, man, the weather just sucks for rifle elk usually. And that's what makes it good. But, I mean, like, I've never gone on a rifle hunt where it didn't snow in the West. I've gone on some archery hunts where we've gotten 2 feet of snow in early September. Like, for some reason, it's just, like, archery hunting, to me, isn't quite as extreme as rifle hunting.
Well, maybe I think it's, like, well, I can see where you're coming from. Like,
for out-of-state,
archery elk hunting is... Well, yeah, archery elk hunting too for like a resident. Like, one, like, I wasn't successful this year in archery elk. Like, the spot that we hunted is not like a secret spot. It's not this like honey hole that we found that's 10 miles back. Like, we ran into more out of state guys, even local guys. Like, there were just people everywhere. And so we called in probably a handful of different hunters from out of state. Like, oh, yeah, I'm from Michigan, I'm from Minnesota, I'm from whatever. It's like, okay. But with archery elk, it's like, okay, you go in here and you bugle. Oh, there's one over there. So you're like, I know there's maybe one elk, maybe a herd of elk, but they're over there. So we know we can work that area and maybe get into them. With rifle elk, it's like, well, I'm going to climb to the top of this mountain because there's a lookout spot. And it's going to take me about 2 hours because I'm trudging through the snow. And I hope that the elk are here. And so you get up there and you're like, yep, the elk are here. Like, let's kill one, whatever. And then most days you're like, they're not in this fucking county anymore. Like, we got to find a whole different spot. So then you go to a different area. You're like, I'm going to hike up to this side of the mountain. So
right.
I see where you're saying, where it's like, yeah. And then it's, you know, most of Montana, like this week. So it's October 24th, but tomorrow in my elk hunting spot is supposed to be like a low of 6. And then this weekend is supposed to be a low of 6. And then Sunday is supposed to be 0.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it sucks. Like, especially a lot of elk hunting is just finding a glassing spot and seeing if they come out of these parks or not. So sitting in the cold, I don't care what cold weather system you have, sitting in the cold 0 or 10 degrees, you ain't going to be warm. Your feet are going to hurt. Like, hope you got like build a fire. It's just going to suck. And then you kill one. You're like, oh yeah, I would do that again. Like, it's a give and take.
Yeah. I do think like rifle elk, obviously better chance for success, but it's less comfortable than archery hunting. Archery hunting, generally, that weather's nicer. You're usually day hunting. You can spike. It's just, I would say, an easier entry point. But, yeah, that's how I would always recommend somebody do it. Start with antelope. Do a deer hunt or two. Do a rifle hunt. Maybe then do a deer bow hunt. Try to spot and stalk something. Maybe do an archery elk hunt. Now, here's the kicker. If you're going with people that are experienced in anything, just do that.
Yeah.
That's going to be easier. Like, if you're going with a group of 6 guys and they're all killers, like, they just have an elk camp set up, they go to the same spot every year, sure, go with them. It doesn't matter how experienced you are. They'll help you along the way, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, then it's easy. But if you're doing this by yourself, or you're trying to convince, like, a buddy to start, you know, from scratch alongside you, do the easy route. You're going to have so much more fun along the way, too. I mean, let's be honest. Elk hunting is 95% being uncomfortable and 5% the best time you've ever had in your life.
I agree. And like, the caveat of what you're saying about going with friends, if you're going to a state that you don't know anything about, like, hit up an outfitter. Like, yeah, they can be expensive, but like, you're going to gain so much knowledge from an outfitter, like your first time elk hunting, as to like what you're looking for, what like, oh, wind, or this is kind of like the area that we're thinking about. This is how the elk move. Like, just that information alone, coming from a state that like doesn't have elk and this is your first time, like, that'll give you enough information and knowledge to be like, I think I can do this on my own. And you're going to see that, like, yeah, we rode horseback into a camp, set up a wall tent. And you're like, well, I don't have horses. I'm not carrying a fucking wall tent. So maybe I'll just like find some drainages to do whatever. But like, I think there's like I think for most Montanans, and I could be wrong on this, but I would say that like they don't necessarily look down upon people who use outfitters, but I think it's like the safest way for somebody who's not used to elk hunting to go about it. Like I think like you should use an outfitter
for certain. If you don't have anything going for you in terms of like, you don't know anybody, you don't know where to go, you've never hunted the West, you don't have any friends that want to do it, you don't want to do it by yourself. Like, yeah, I think if it's a realistic option to start with. I mean, one of the best hunters I know, this person has done a sheep slam with his bow. I mean, just a phenomenal hunter. He just shot a moose that was so wide that he couldn't pack it out because it's, you know, right antler was dragging on the ground when he had it on his pack.
Fuck.
He had to bend over, you know, and I think he shot like an 11-foot brown bear on the same hunt. Like, this dude is insane. And his advice was like, hunt with an outfitter. I've learned more hunting from outfitters than anything else in my hunting career. Obviously, he has, you know, the means to do all that. And so, yeah, you might have to save up. But, yeah, I think it's a great strategy for someone looking to get started, for sure. Don't skip out on the outfitters. Yeah, it's more, you know, serotonin when you do it by yourself and you're successful. But yeah, that doesn't mean you're not going to have fun with an outfitter. Like, do an outfitter for a year, right, and then maybe not. Or do it for 2 years and then maybe not. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to skin the cat. Yeah. I think it's important that you do something. Like, if you – nothing better to learn how to hunt the West than hunting the West, however you do it.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, your probability, if you go with an outfitter, one, they're, like – essentially, they're the professionals. Like, they do this for a living. So, like, they're probably – one, they probably have leases on private land, or they know some spots. They've been scouting all year where you haven't been able to. And I would say your probability of becoming successful on the hunt is higher than just being like, I'm just going to go do it myself.
Oh, 100%. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So, like, you're going to get that high of shooting your first bull. And you're like, okay, cool. So, like, that's the first step. So, now what would be the steps of, like, all the gear I need to buy to do this on my own? I just think, I don't know. I think it'd be better if like a lot of people hit up outfitters or like, hey, I'm coming out to this hunt. Like, what do you charge? And I understand, like, I've seen some prices of some elk hunts and I'm like, geez, you know, like, I don't got that money just laying around. Like, Godspeed if you do, but I'm just forced to do it by myself and learn the hard way of like, well, I hope they're here and they're not. So
well, you,
the next ridge over.
You have a Montana outfitter that you're engaged to. So that's a nice little perk. Someone that's been hunting that state their entire life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think the thing too is like people fail to realize coming from, you know, lower elevation states, like I live at 3,500 feet where elk hunt starts at like 7.75. So it's like, double, and you don't think it would fuck with you, but it does. Like, there'll be days where I'm like, I have been working my ass off, fucking cardio, hiking all summer, and then I get to my elk spot and I'm like, why am I so out of shape? It's like, you have half the air in your body, like, you are struggling.
That's hilarious that you brought that up. So we just got done archery elk hunting in Southwest Colorado. Our base camp was at like 9. A lot of our hunting was from like 9-8 to 10-6, 10-5, and then for one, just to say we did it, me and a buddy hiked up to 11.
Fuck.
And so, which isn't that much, like, to go, I mean, we drove to 10, so we only walked up to 11. Like, it's not, you know, I've done worse, like, National Park hikes, right, than that, and it's nothing crazy, but it does, you start to get there. Well, you know, we all train as much as we can. Like, I used to do a ton of CrossFit just because, not because CrossFit's, I didn't drink the Kool-Aid, but it is like one of the best, like, if you could only pick one thing to do, it's like the most varying. I like it for training because it kicks my ass every time, and you get weights and you get cart, whatever. And I was doing all this, and everyone in our group, we got some people that are insane. Like, when we say, yeah, let's run up there, like, they're like, oh, okay. And he'll actually run up a mountain and chase the elk. And we're like, no, we meant like, let's just hurry. What? And we got some guys that are in phenomenal shape. One guy's in the Army too. I don't know what he's doing now. He was in charge of 4 tanks. Like, he was on one of them, and then he was in charge of 3 others. And so we get out there and we're doing this hike, and a local, Stephen Walker, he's been on the podcast twice now. We went shed hunting with him in New Mexico. He's from the area. He hunts like, I don't know, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 miles a year shed hunting, and then all Western hunting. Like, he's in the mountain all the time. His record, he said, was like 700 sheds in a season between him and his son and his close friends. Yeah, he said he hasn't done that very often, but he's just that's Billy goat. But he's like a bigger full size guy, like 6'2", like not a string bean, obviously not overweight. Obviously he's in good shape, but like he's not a small like little, you know, light ass person that can just hop in, you know, everywhere he goes. And so we're hiking in, and it's kicking my butt. I mean, we're going up one of these slopes that's like this.
And it's just never ending straight up.
Yeah, and they wanted to go straight up it, and we're getting out, and we're going up the other side. And it's funny because all of us were starting to feel it. A couple people went ahead. One guy had wet boots, so he wanted to get them off. And Steven was like itching to go. He's like, he doesn't really want to be taking this many breaks because we're climbing like a mile out of this hellhole. And so we're like, Steven, man, if you're good, just go follow Ben. Like, you guys can go. And so the rest of us were just taking our time, you know, not trying to get too gassed. And so Steven runs like 100 yards up the mountain. We can see his headlight to catch up to Ben and then just starts walking from there. Doesn't even need a break. And Ben's like, I needed a break eventually. Like, I did pretty good, but I did have to take a break to catch my breath. Steven didn't need to catch his breath. He just started talking. And so we're doing this. Well, then he goes, yeah, I wish I could hike like I used to, but I got COVID like 6 months ago. Man, it's still like, it's my lungs still aren't the same. I'm like, dude, you just floored all of us in our group, and we've been training for a full year. But yeah, it's the difference. He lives like we had to drive a half hour up a mountain to get to his house when we went shed hunting. Like, he lives up the mountain, not in the valley of, you know, his town. And so I'm sure he's always doing it. He's always breathing that air. He's always climbing mountains. I mean, it was like, I don't know, 100 times better shape than I was for it. I mean, it was insane the difference that it made.
Well, like, I just think that, like, there's no better place to train for the mountains. Like, I really don't think there's, like, a workout plan that somebody will try to sell you or, like, oh, you should be doing this every day. I think because no matter how much you work out, how much cardio you do, them mountains don't fuck around. And like, I live like I'm in the mountains a lot. Like, I'm not in them every day, but I am in the mountains quite a bit. And there are some days where I'm just like, God, like, why am I sucking so bad today? It's just like, these mountains ain't no bitch. Like, you gotta, you just gotta say whatever. Like, it is what it is.
I think the difference is like, I could train my ass off and just say I gave it a full year of literally 100%. Like, I am passed out on the gym mats every workout. Yeah, I'm going to be way better than I was this year. But the difference is, like, even when I get to the mountain, that oxygen's going to take its tax. Versus if you do the same, like, you're giving it 100%, but you're just running trails in the mountains, like, you're going to get better too. But the difference is, like, you're training for the event. And so when you get to elk hunting, you're like, well, I know exactly what I can do because I've been doing this exact thing. Versus me, it's like, I did as best I could, but I really don't know how it's going to compare because we didn't have a mountain to judge. You know, I wasn't doing it on, I was doing like, I wasn't really practicing for the game I'm playing. It's like, I was practicing baseball and I got a football game coming up. Yeah. Like, some fundamentals are going to carry over, but it's a little bit different when you don't have that elevation.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like, coming from like an army perspective, and I talk about this on a podcast with the Hunt Lift Eat guys, like a lot of those guys are military. Like, as an infantryman, you do like a 12-mile ruck march, right? And you always do everything for time. So you try to do it as fast as possible because you're like, I only have to be miserable for 2.5 hours and I'll just be fucking done and I'll be left alone. So like, when I first came out here into Montana, that was my mindset. I was like, oh, I need to get to the top of this mountain as fast as I fucking can. But in reality, I just passed through so much like huntable terrain. And because I was being like a dork army dude, being like, oh, I'm going to be tough and get to the top of the mountain in an hour. Like, you spook elk or you spook deer. Like, you forget that like, yes, that's where I want to go, but I'm passing through some pristine hunting area and like not paying attention and you bump deer or elk or something. Like, there's been so many times where like, you're just, on a mindset, and you just get to the top of the mountain and you're like, dude, we busted out so many fucking deer on the way up here. And then you get to the top and you're like, there's nothing up here. Like, why did we even waste our fucking time up here?
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny you say that, 'cause I've kind of thought the same thing too. Like, yeah, you can go faster, but at least for me, like if I hit the red line too hard, it takes a long time to get it back, versus if I just keep stopping in the yellow, it seems like I can just recover that much faster. So it's almost like,
yeah,
I save time by taking a little bit. You can't go wild. Like, you can't be taking a break every 10 steps, but
I don't think breaks are bad. Like, there's a ton of times where, like, especially if you're hunting in the cold, I try not to get super sweaty, because I know when to wherever I'm going, I'm going to be sitting.
Yeah.
And that's just not a good combination to have. So, like, if I know my body, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of getting a little sweaty, I'll relax for a second and I'll either go slower or I'll just kind of sit and hang out, and like the fiance and I will just like bullshit. And so then I'll be like, are you good? Yep, we're good. Like, let's keep moving. Because, like, again, I learned the hard way where, like, you busted your ass through the snow to get to the top, and you get up there and you're like, oh, I'm going to sit here all day. Well, it's 7 degrees out with a 10 degree negative fucking wind chill. And you're like, this is awful. Like, I'm soaked and I'm freezing, and like, I want to get out of here. And so I think a lot of guys are like, oh, you got to get to the destination, you got to be hard. I'm like, kind of, but you can also take breaks and like make sure that you're out there all day.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about mule deer hunting before we go, because you and your fiance have shot some just dandy bucks. But before we do that, I was elk hunting in Montana one time. I'm not going to tell you where, because we'll probably go back there. It was a good unit. But it was one of those days where it was snowing, and we were running out of options. You know how you're like, oh, plan A, plan B, hit plan A again. Now we're like plan C, plan D, plan, you know, you start like, you're like, we're running out of spots. We got like day five and we haven't shot an elk yet. And so I go out on my own. I'm going to like do a scouting loop through some stuff that we heard was good. And so for the first half of the hike, it was just like super easy trails, nice walking, plenty of parks. There's snow on the ground, but man, when I started making my hook, I just started getting into like deadfall and creek bottoms that I had to cross. And like, you think, like, you when you ever you see a creek on a map, you picture it's going to be like this nice slow creek with like a couple pebbles to step across. They're always like hell holes. Like,
they're miserable.
They're deadfall and timber and side, like, you got no options. You're like, ugh. And so I'm getting into it, and I'm just like, It's taken me down to like a quarter of a mile per hour, like climbing over, you know, deadfall and backtracking, going this way, going that way. All of a sudden, I finally, like, I'm like, okay, if I bust it up and over here, I can just follow all these parks out. Parks aren't a common term. Meadows. We'd call them meadows, but everyone in the West calls them parks. So meadows. And I'm walking down the edge of these meadows, and I can see it's pretty wet out in the middle. So I'm just walking down the edge. And I take a step, and I sink to my armpits. I went from, like, hard ground. I take one step, and I fell through. And, like, my rifle was on a sling, like, in a gun scabbard, like the Kafaru gun bearer. And that hit and went sideways and then got stuck under my arm. And that's what stopped me. Like, this, my rifle laying, you know, now laying flat on the ground. And I'm like, ugh! And I'm, like, one leg kind of, like, folded. So it was, like, still up on high ground, like, on a knee. But my other leg was in the muck all the way up past my, like, belt.
Ugh.
And I'm like, you gotta be. And I'm already pissed at this point. I wasn't seeing any elk, and I was doing deadfall and shit. Now I'm falling in a sinkhole, like a real goddamn sinkhole. You know, my entire life, I'm like, sinkholes really aren't that big of a deal. Not as big of a deal as that, like, they made them out to be when I was in elementary school. Like, everyone thought, like, sinkholes are just everywhere and they're the end of the world.
Quicksand everywhere. Yeah.
Watch
out for quicksand.
Yeah. Quicksand really didn't turn out to be as big of a deal as I thought it would be. But I found some in this, and it was wet. And so I'm literally clawing my way out of this hole. And I get out, and I'm just like, that leg's like, I'm wearing brown pants, and that leg's now black. Like, just mud and water. And I'm like still 3 miles from the four-wheeler through like a trail I haven't gone. And my plan was to walk these meadows out the whole way, but clearly that's not a good idea. And the sidewall goes straight up. So I'm like, now I'm trying to like billy goat over these rocks to stay out of the meadow, because now I don't trust it. It was the most miserable day of elk hunting I've ever had. I got back to camp like with 2 hours left, and I'm like, F it. I'm not going out again. I changed clothes. I hung up everything over the wood stove. I just started making supper for everyone else.
Yep.
I'm like, screw this. So
you have more days than that. Like, that's so funny because you have a lot of those days where you're like, where we hunt is like old burn. So like 6 years ago, a place will burn. And now it's like our elk spot. It's, there are some spots and there's ways to navigate around it, but like you end up doing twice the amount of mileage going around the shit, which is fine. But like 4 years ago, I could just walk right up through the deadfall. But like, people don't realize how miserable walking through deadfall is. It is the fucking worst.
We got into some deadfall one time in Trout Creek where it was like, I can't even describe it. It was huge, huge trees, like 4 footers, like massive trees. And they were all down and they were all on top of each other. Like, usually deadfall is like 50% trees are standing, 50% are down. It's just a jungle. This was, I should have taken a picture, 100% deadfall. It looked like an ocean of driftwood. Like, the ocean had risen and a bunch of driftwood came in and then just plopped down. Like, there was not a tree growing in it, nothing. I don't know what caused this, a tornado, a avalanche, I don't know. But it was like hundreds of acres of this. And we get to the edge, and it's like, you know, log on top of log on top of log. So some of the logs are like 8 feet off the ground because they're going over two other logs. Yeah. And so we're trying to go up and over these things and down and under them. And eventually we're like, I just hopped on top of one and I just ran the log. And then when I got to the end, I jumped on the next one and ran that one and then jumped up and ran. And we just started to go. And I actually went really easy, but I'm like, I've never seen deadfall like this. Like literally one, not a single tree standing for hundreds of acres.
Yeah, you got to be careful with like running on deadfall too. One, because like if it's wet, like it's going to be slippery. But
oh, yeah.
There's been times like you said, like eight, like you start climbing deadfall just trying to find the next log, whatever. And you're not paying attention as to how high up you're getting. And like next thing you know, you're like, I'm 10 feet up on this deadfall. And like there's nothing below me but like more sharp deadfall.
Yeah.
If I fall, this is going to suck.
Yeah, the only thing was these logs were so insanely big that it was like walking on flat land, and they were dry. Well, walking on wet logs, I'm terrified of it. Like I just feel myself really like throwing an ankle or a knee. But yeah, no, it was crazy. I've never seen it again. We never went back there, but it was just like the craziest experience with deadfall that I've ever had.
Yeah, I hate deadfall, and a lot of spots that we hunt is like old, like thick timber, and they get burnt, and then like the root system is all fucked, so like the wind come in and blow it all down. But the problem is too, the elk love that shit.
Yeah.
And they're in it. And but there's no way you can stalk an elk in deadfall. It's just not a thing. And but you think you can, and then blow elk out.
So starting to sound like a hard way every year. Personal experience.
Oh dude, I had so many bad experiences in the deadfall this year. I left my fiance on this wallow. I'm like, I'm gonna go to the top of here, because I used to go to the top of here all the time. And like I'll bugle at the top, and like down the other side is like this nice thick timber meadowy kind of area. And like we always seem to have like at least one bugle down there. So I'm like, I'm gonna go check it out. Well, it used to take me like 25 minutes to get to the top. It's an hour and a half, and I'm like three quarters of the way up. I'm sweating bullets. The logs are wet. I get to the top, not a fucking bugle. So I'm like, all right, let me come back down. So I come back down, and like I said, it's wet, and I like stepped on this log and just like both my feet just went out from underneath me, and then I just went boom right to the ground, and now I'm stuck in between fucking deadfall. I threw my bow. It's like 6 yards away from me. I'm like, oh, what is? I can't get up. I'm like, fuck me. I had to like take my pack off, and like, oh, I was like, I'm never coming. I told her, I was like, I'm never going back up there again unless this burns again. Like, don't even ask. There could be like a 400-inch bull up there. I'm not going up there. I'm not fucking doing it.
That's hilarious. We still got to get to the mule deer, but I was crossing some deadfall on our way out one time, and it was four of us. And one of my buddies was walking, and I can't quite remember what happened, but I'm pretty sure the lace loop on his bow or his boots hooked like one of the sharp sticks of a deadfall. And it was one of those things where like it was like four or five trees. And it wasn't we weren't really in deadfall, but there was like four or five trees that all fell down. And so everyone was just like first log, second log, third log, and then down, down, off, right? Like you're just kind of walking up and over these dead, like just one cluster. And he was last. I was right in front of him. So I was walking, and I just hit the ground. and I hear just this, like everything goes out, like dubstep, like, you know, forest dubstep. And I look back, and his boot was hooked, and it was up in the air because his laces were caught on one of the branches. He was in the hole, so he was on the ground. And when I looked down, I saw nothing but arrows and broadheads going all different directions in with his limbs and broken branches and his bow. So when he fell, every arrow in his quiver came out, which is super dangerous. Like, these are razor blades, and he fell on top of them. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, this guy's going to need to get HVAC'd. Didn't even break a skin anywhere. Didn't get cut. But I'm looking down, like, on top of him, and he's in this hole, and there's just limbs and his limbs, tree limbs, and arrows just in a maze. And I can't believe what happened. I mean,
dude, deadfall is the timber fucking quicksand. It'll get you.
Deadfall will get you. The best way to wreck a hunt is try to walk through deadfall.
Yeah, just go around it. It'll be fine.
But on to the mule deer. We got to touch on the mule deer. So you and your fiance have shot some dandy bucks, and I'm sure it takes a lot of scouting. But I've shot two really good bulls. One nice bull, one world-class bull. Like I've shot a bull that I probably will never shoot another bigger one unless I start hunting those outfitters we talked about. And so, but I've never had what I would call a good mule deer hunt. Every mule deer hunt I've ever been on, it was in a unit and a year where, like, the drought or whatever was going on, it was like, shoot the first legal buck you can see because it's the only legal buck you're going to see. And so I've always done that. And I've shot, like, I think the biggest mule deer I shot is like 130-inch 3x3. So it looks really impressive next to my, you know, whitetails. But overall, as far as mule deer go, not the dream by any means. And I just want to do a mule deer hunt where you can pass on bucks. Like, you see a couple bucks and you're just like, yeah, I don't know. It's early. He's maybe doesn't have quite as deep of forks as I'm looking for, or maybe, you know, I don't know, he's not very heavy, or, you know what I mean? Like, just be able to pass, just look at locks of bucks. I want to go on a mule deer hunt like an antelope hunt, where you see a lot of game, and you kind of like, that one, let's go after that one. That one I like. And I'm just curious, when you guys mule deer hunt, is that typically how it's going?
Yeah, so, like, her and I are big advocates on, like, for us, like, we don't, unless it's, like, a nice, either an older deer, like, I shot, like, on Sunday, I shot, like, an old whitetail, like, gray face whitetail, like, he's not the biggest rack, but, like, his teeth were worn down, he's probably the biggest buck in this area, or one of the biggest, but, like, I shot a mature, older buck, which is, like, you know, trophy-wise, like, yeah, he's not, like, super heavy or whatever, but he's a solid buck for an archery bow, and, like, I was happy to take it.
Yeah, I was looking at his picture right now.
But, like, there's a lot of times, like, last year, we passed up on so many four, like, I shot the biggest bull I probably ever shoot, I think, like, on public land ever, I'm ever going to shoot. Like, I shot a 350-inch bull last year on public land.
Is that the one in the snow?
Yeah, which is hard to do, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's super, to be honest, it's just fucking luck at that point. Like, I found a track, I had a cow tag, I fucking chased his bull. I thought it was two cows. Ends up being two bulls. He was closest to me, 27 yards, and I blasted him, like, with a rifle, like, in the timber. But so after that, I had this mindset, like, okay, I shot this really nice bull. I'm going to wait out for, like, a 170, 180-inch mule deer.
Yeah.
And we saw some. We saw some really nice mule deer, but they were always playing a game of, like, well, we're on private today.
Yeah.
We scum through, like, the public or the area that you can hunt, like, this one corner, but now we're on another section of private. We don't have an issue with not filling buck tags just to say, like, oh, we shot a buck. So, like, we will not shoot spikes. We won't shoot small 3-point. Like, we don't really, like, if we need the meat, we'll just shoot a doe, you know? Like, we're willing to eat the buck tag.
Yeah.
To wait out to shoot a heavy or a solid buck. And so, like the tag she drew this year for her mule deer, it's not, I wouldn't even really say it's a hunt. Like, it's an area where you're shooting like yard bucks, but there's just so many massive deer around. So like, oh, we're driving down, it's like, it's not a hunt, I would say. Like, we didn't really do a lot of hunting. Like, we didn't, like, we spot and stalked, but like, it's not, I don't know, not really a hunt. But that's like the draw area. Like, you're driving by and there's been like 200 inch deer that have been taken out of this unit.
Yeah.
And so you drive by and you're like, okay, that deer is massive. But is it this, is it this unit massive? You're like, you're passing on, you know, there are some bucks that we, like, one buck that we saw got killed that morning was 196 by a kid.
Oh my gosh.
And it was in like full velvet, like beautiful buck, but you know, they shot it in like a little field behind some lady's house. Like, so it's not, you know, it's like, it's legal. Yeah. It's what they do. It's just not that. But like, we've had instances where like, we're glassing up bucks, and I passed on last year, I don't know, 15 different bucks. And I'm like, he could use a year. And like, mind you, it's public land. So like, he may not make it a year, but for me, I'm like, I wouldn't necessarily be proud to like show this buck off that I shot it. You know, I'm like, there are bigger bucks out there. I'm willing to put in the work to find it. So if I don't, I'm okay with like, one, not shooting a deer, or two, shooting a doe that year. And that's what I ended up doing. I just shot this like mature doe at the last day. And I was like, I called a friend of mine. I was like, hey, she couldn't hunt. She had shoulder surgery. So I'm like, hey, if I shoot this doe, do you want it? Cause we already had killed two elk.
Yeah.
I shot two or four does, and she shot a buck. And my little sister at the time was living with me. She shot a buck. So like, we had enough meat. And I was like, if I shoot this doe, like, I'll pack it out. Like, do you want it? She's like, yep. And I was like, all right, I'll call you back. And I ended up shooting this like mature doe, packed it out, like, no big deal. But I was happy to like donate that meat to her rather than like shoot a little, you know, 3-point and be like, oh, I killed a buck this year. But I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's exactly how I am in whitetails. I haven't killed a whitetail buck since 2019 because we got private land. I love habitat. I love managing them. I'm only shooting bucks that are 4 years old. And if I mean,
yeah,
as soon as I say that, I'll accidentally shoot a 2.5-year-old because it was low light. But that's the goal. But for the mule deer thing, like, there's a couple. So like, I don't know if you remember it, but your buddy Jim's buck.
Yep.
That was like 100% like I would be super happy with. I've never seen a mule deer buck as big as that hunting mule deer. I've seen.
Was that his second one or his first one?
Ooh, I don't know. It's a 4x4. It looks like it's 2 years ago, roughly. 100 weeks ago.
Let's see.
So probably is like 2021.
Yeah, so we were out doing a veteran hunt, and Jim and I were looking at some deer. We had found it's so funny because my buddy Zach and I were just trying to get Jim to like shoot any deer. We're like, dude, just shoot that one. And Jim was very adamant. He's like, no, I want to shoot like a decent buck. And Zach and I are just down his neck like, oh yeah, that's a monster. And he's like, it's a fucking like little 3-point. And he's like, I'm not shooting that. I'm like, come on, dude, like give us like, we've been hiking these mountains. Like, we want to pack out together, you know, like have the homies pack out a deer. And so we're looking around and we've seen some nice bucks and, you know, again, they're on private. And so you're trying to get access, but like everybody and their mother calls this poor landowner. And he's like, please stop calling me. Like, you know, and you understand, but
yeah.
And then we're just sitting there and he like, I have the spotter. I don't even have my rifle. I just brought a spotter and he's got his binos. And he's like, I think I see a buck. Or it could just be a doe with sagebrush. And so I'm like, all right, where is it at? So I put up the glass and I'm like, looking. And it's this buck. And he's like, I call it ugly sleeping. Like his head is down, tongue is out. Like this.
Just passed out.
Oh, he's just passed out. And there's a ton of does around him. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, oh, that's actually a decent buck, dude. Like, no, like I'm not bullshitting. He's like, all right, let me see it. And he sees it. And he's like, okay, like, yeah, I'll shoot that one. So then we like, you know, climb down this mountain and he shoots it. But, Those are shooter bucks. Like every year for me, I would say those are shooter bucks. And like the size of the buck obviously goes down if it's like archery. Like, yeah, I'll shoot some lesser of a bucks if it's archery just because you have to like stalk them and it's cooler. But with rifle, I mean, I shot my antelope at 500 this year. Just like the technology and rifles, it's kind of unfair. I'm like, oh, there's a deer 500 yards out. Like he has no idea that we're even here. So with rifle, I'll be very picky. Unless it's like a cool characteristic deer, like, I don't know, maybe he's got like a weird side or like a palmation and he's little, but, for the most part, like Savannah and I, when it comes to deer, we are equally on agreeance that if it's a, like, we're not going to shoot little deer. Like, yeah, we would rather eat our tags. And like, again, like last year I essentially ate my tag on a buck and just shot a doe, but like, it didn't bother me at all because I didn't go home with like a 1.5-year-old, 2-year-old deer that was like, had potential to be a really nice deer, but I shot him early.
Yeah. And I passed a mule deer, a 1.5-year-old, like big fork. Well, not big fork. Like, he's just a normal fork, 1.5-year-old fork on that Colorado hunt. Cause he was off the road. I'm like, I don't need a mule deer that bad. Like, at this point, I'm like, I'm ready. I want to shoot a 4x4, like a nice 4x4. I mean, you and Savannah's Instagram feeds are filled with like great 4x4s. I'm not even talking like a great 4x4. I'm talking like a 150 4x4, like just your average 4x4. I just want to be able to do that. And I guess my real question is, like, is that something where you're really having to like scout the summer and like really spend a ton of time in Montana versus like an out-of-stater can show up to a decent unit and just work hard for a week and get a crack at them? Because we tried that in Southeast Montana, and I knew it was going to be a lot of people. I underestimated how many people it was going to be. And so I don't think I'm going back to Southeast Montana, but Montana is probably going to be the place. Maybe Wyoming, but probably Montana is the next mule deer hunt.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, to be honest with you, like, we don't mule deer scout at all.
You just see when you're doing other stuff.
Yeah, well, not even that. Like, I mean, the buck that I shot with my bow a couple years ago was a complete accident. Like, I didn't expect to see a buck this size in here. All I had seen was like little forkies, like little spikes. And I ended up just like walking up on this deer in his bed, and he just like picks his head up, and I'm like, oh, that's a fucking decent mule deer, and put an arrow in and shot him. Like, it was, again, the luckiest thing I've ever done. But when it comes to scouting mule deer, like, we don't take time like before season, like, okay, we're gonna go check these deer. Like, we just don't.
Okay.
Like, we just know of like habitat that they're in, and she's very good and I'm very good at like being patient and just sitting on a ridgeline and like picking apart sage. And like, that's a big thing too, is like, if you're gonna go hunt eastern Montana, like, have good glass, like, be patient, you know, because there's been times where we're just sitting on this ridge line, we're like, there's fucking nothing here. We've been 4 hours, and like, we end up like moving 200 yards down the ridge and looking back on our ridge, and there was a buck bedded behind or down below us, like a decent buck, like a couple hundred yards. And just,
yeah,
I don't know. I just think, like, this week, or when I shot my antelope, there was 4 bucks that I'd seen in this area that were studs. Like, I tried to get one with a bow, but, it didn't happen. But like, small chunk of BLM land just south of Antelope, and next thing I know, I just see like these 3 bucks just come out of this like river bottom thing, and I'm like, holy shit, these are some shooters. And like, it's in the middle of nowhere, and I don't even know if you can access this road when it's snowing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I just saw a buck in Colorado that I think was 180. I mean, he was huge, he was wide, tall, deep forks. I could see his mass from like 500 yards away as he's running away. I mean, it was insane. I was like, that's the biggest mule deer I've ever seen. But I've never seen big ones when I'm hunting. That's the problem. I think I need to work harder. I think that's definitely a good part of it. I think, to me, mule deer hunting seems like it should be antelope hunting, but I think I need to just put in a little bit extra work and get a little bit farther off the road.
Well, that's the thing too, is that we were driving, like, about my antelope, like, after opener here, like, the antelope are just sparse because everybody shoots the shit out of them. Like, it's, you know, you could shoot an antelope 600-700 yards, like, they just stand there. But we ended up, we're driving down the road, and I just look in the rearview mirror, and this grouse just goes flying across the road. And I'm like, I look at my buddy Pat, and I'm like, you want to shoot a grouse? Like, we haven't seen shit all day. Like, everything's been on private, can't get access, like, whatever. He's like, yeah, I'll shoot a grouse. And I'm like, all right, pull over the truck, and I'm like, let's hop out and shoot this grouse. So I'm like, I'm going to bring my rifle just in case. So I get my orange on, and like, we're looking for this grouse, whatever. And I look way in the backside of this BLM piece where like the rolling hills go, where you can't see from the road. And there's 2 bucks just bedded out in the middle of this field. So I'm like, no shit. So like, I think if you go out mule deer hunting, act like you're shed hunting or something. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's the trick. Like, you just, if you're going out for a species, act like you're not going out for that species, and you'll run into them. Like, that's how it's always been.
It's funny
like,
you say that.
Mule deer I shot.
Because I found 4 mule deer sheds. I found 4 mule deer sheds when we were mule deer hunting, and we were hiking. I mean, not like archery elk hiking, but we were getting like a mile off the road, setting up, glassing. Because I've done a couple mule deer hunts, and that's how I've always found them. And it, I mean, we'd tagged out, but we'd you know, it was just shooting the first legal buck you could find. And it's, right. I don't know. I would like to do more like looking at them and just being like, yeah, I will see another one. I'm not ready to shoot that buck yet.
I think like Southeast Montana is tough because there's a million people.
And like, it was like a 3-year drought when we went.
Yeah. And like that area, they give out a lot of B tags for a rifle too. So like,
yeah,
I think a resident, you can buy doe tags for like $10 a piece. And like, there are fucking does everywhere. And so like, they just get shot to shit. And then like, there's roads that go everywhere and there's side by sides and there's people and there's big bucks in there. The one he shot last year was in that area, I think. And, I don't know. He just like, it's just a tough area and the deer numbers are way down. Like it used to be really good, but it's just not as good as anymore as it used to be.
Yeah. Are you doing a lot of your mule deer hunting on winter range or are you doing it like up in the timber?
We hunt a lot of Eastern Montana. So it's like a lot of coulees, kind of sage bluff areas.
Okay.
I've seen some really nice mule deer bucks in the timber. The problem is that like, it's hard to glass in the timber. So unless you're like walking around and you like see one, it's more like elk hunting where you're just like kind of punkering around in the woods. But for the most part, we'll find a spot that's more open per se and just like find a bluff and sit on it and then just like pick apart the sage. And you'd be surprised how many deer you actually find. And like, if you find a doe in the rut, like I'm sure there's going to be a buck around somewhere. So like just wait on her.
Yeah.
A lot of times we'll just sit there and like, oh, there's a bunch of does down there. And next thing you know, there's like this, you know, smaller buck or a decent buck just like crests the hill and you're like, oh, there's a shooter or there, oh, there's a buck, you know?
Yeah. I do love glassing. I mean, that's why I'm so drawn to mule deer hunting. Cause it's like, it's your chance to just sit and glass. And I love glassing. I mean, I'll glass sheds. I really enjoy it, but I think I just got unlucky, picked a couple units, had a couple droughts, hard to, you know, low deer numbers. I mean, I think it's just in a way, you know, the places we went just weren't that unit. I just got to keep finding units.
I think a big thing that we do is like, yes, we'll hunt some like big public land chunks and we'll hunt some like BLM pieces or BMAs. Like I think a lot of people set their eyes on those because they're like, oh, there's a big chunk, like there's got to be deer in here, and I'm sure there are deer, but like where we've become more successful is like, oh, there's like an 80 acre piece of public the road drives by. A lot of people probably just like, oh, there's nothing down there, and they drive by it. Like that's my kind of like what I think is going on. And then we go down like past where you can't see from the road, and there's deer that are kind of just like huddled up in an area that you just can't see, and they're not getting fucked with, so that's where they're gonna be.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like anyone would take a 40 in Minnesota to hunt deer. Like,
yeah,
that's all take. Like some people hunt 20s, really.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, plenty of land. I got like 3 tree stands on 20 acres. Or like, yeah, like, I mean, here we've gotten, I don't know, 6-8 bucks on camera. Not all of them are giant, but we have 40 acres here and we've already got 6 or 8 bucks and we've only lived here for 3 months. So
yeah.
And, but when you go out west, everyone's like, oh, there's 80,000 acres. So they're like, ah, that's only like 500 acres. Like it's not that, and then you're talking like 80s. Like, yeah, no one's hunting an 80 or a 160.
Yeah. It's dude. It's, and like 80 acres is a fucking lot of property. Like I own 8 acres and I own 8 acres and it's like, damn, it's a lot to take care of. And I don't even go to the backside of it ever. But like, if you think of like 150 or even like 50 acres, you're like, dude, this place is huge. Like there could be deer everywhere. Like why are we not hunting these? And so we've like, our scouting for deer will mostly be like, okay, look on the map, like where are smaller chunks and we'll see if we can hit those. And like, you can hit them quicker than hitting like a 200, 300 acre piece. But
yeah,
we just try to find like smaller chunks
with like a little bit of something like terrain, coulees, a little bit of brush. It's like, hey, this one's got a brushy draw and we can sit here and see the whole thing, but you can't see it from the road. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I want to do that. I heard you say you got a camper or you were going to get a camper. Something about,
I have a camper.
The late season rifle hunts, I've been doing them in wall tents and like, yeah, I don't know. It's fun. Wall tents are super fun when it's warm. They're doable when it's cold, but man, when it's cold and windy,
it's not fun.
Yeah. I mean, I want to get a camper eventually. I know you're not going to save money, but it's going to be worth it to have hard walls and a furnace.
Yeah. I think for us too, it's like we did last year, we did a 10 day elk hunt in like a tent, like a Four Seasons tent with an air mattress, and like it was doable. But like, I'm 31, about to be 32, and I don't want to sound like I feel like, I don't want to sound like I'm 100 years old, but like, there is something nice about coming home to like a camper. You just take your boots off, turn the heater on. Oh, I want to lay in the bed, not some fucking bullshit air mattress. Like, oh, I have a table to sit on inside and make my sandwich, or I got a microwave, a generator. Like, I don't know. I've become soft, I guess. But it's
no, nice. I don't think it's soft. I think there's like, yeah, some things are more extreme than others. But if you're out there to kill, I always ask myself, like, is this going to help me kill or not? Like, especially spike hunting. Yeah. Like, is spike hunting going to help me kill or not? Like, can I just walk a mile out and get back to base camp and have a better food, better sleep, better everything, and then just walk a mile in the morning? Probably. Now, if the elk are, like, 7 miles in, it's like, okay, now spiking in 6 miles or 7 miles is going to help me kill. And so that's what right. I'll do it. And I think the camper thing, like, late season, like, you're going to get out of bed faster in a camper. You're going to get better sleep. You're not going to sleep in. You're not going to skip hunts. You're going to get good food. You're, you know, all these things. It's like, yeah, and it happens to be more comfortable. Not everything has to be extreme just for the gram, you know? Like, I definitely want to hunt campers.
I totally agree. I know. It's so funny because my Anthony and I were talking about this the other day. People are like, oh, you know, I shot this bull. Like,
hey, you're back.
That damn Montana internet. But as I was saying, like, people want to have these experiences, and I think they're good about like packing out a bull like really far out. But dude, I'll take a bull like 200 yards off the road any day. Like,
oh yeah, I will definitely, like, a year later, I will definitely kind of, you know, humble brag about how far I packed out a brutal bull pack out. But if there's a bull off the side of the road, I'm shooting it. Like, I definitely not ashamed to pack a 100 yard pack out.
Well, like, the first elk I ever shot was in my backyard.
Yeah, so. I would do it. I'll tell you I'll tell you right now, if I had elk on my 40 and I had a tag for it, I would be hunting elk in my backyard too. Abby shot her first deer on our farm. You literally could have watched the entire thing from our master bed. Like, we have all windows on that side of the house. I could have been laying in my bed watching her shoot this deer because we have a food plot. Like, we had a pasture in the back of our yard, and then we just turned it into a food plot and put a stand there, and that's where she shot her deer. Like, it was literally a part of our backyard.
Right there.
Yeah. And like, there's been times where she's woken me up in the morning and be like, hey, there's a deer in the food plot. And I can just roll over and look at it.
Dude, I had a buddy who had, like, this perfect, where he built his house, he could glass up this public land park, and there was always deer up there, like, there'd be elk up there. And I would just wake up early, you know, I'm like, they're either going to be there or not. So I would call him. I'm like, what's the scoop? And he's like, nope, there's nothing up there this morning. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to this other spot, or I'm just not going to hunt today. And then there'd be times he's like, yeah, there's a good one, like, kind of hanging around the bottom. And I was like, all right, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Like, I don't know. I'm all for the hard hunts, but to get an easy one out of the way, it's nice to
roll out of
bed and just be like, oh, dude. And you only get one easy hunt a year. I'm like torn on that. Like, you get one hunt that like just goes perfect. We're like, oh, first day out, shot whatever I was looking for, great, like whatever. And then the rest of the season is just gonna be a tough motherfucker. And like, that's how it's been. You know, we shot her buck this year, the archery buck she shot was like opening morning, pretty easy hunt. And I'm like, well, the rest of the season is gonna be tough. And elk hunting this year was fucking tough. I mean, just quiet. Tons of people, it was just a tough, miserable experience, but we got to share that all together.
Yeah, I think you've got better hunting than I do if you get one perfect hunt every year, because I'm like, man, I get like one perfect hunt every decade. I get a lot of great hunts, but like the perfect ones, they are few and far between, so you better cherish them while they're happening.
Oh, dude, if you ask my fiance like how lucky I am in the woods, like, it's unreal how stupid lucky I am. Like, my first bull I ever killed, 15 minutes into opening morning, I had 5 bulls in a drainage. First one, called one in, fucking 40 yards broadside, plugged him, hunt's over. Like,
wow.
800 yards from the truck. I mean, he was 25 yards from an old, like, trail. So I'm like, all right, well, that's fun. Like, my first bull, like, walked in 15 minutes, like, put my in reach on, texted my buddies, I'm like, bulled out, and they're like, bullshit. No way. I'm like, y'all better get over here because these bulls will not shut up. Like, I had this whole basin was just lit up with bulls. And like, the 6-point just comes over the ridge I get one cow call. He looked right at me, come down, turned sideways, like perfectly in an opening, fucking 40 yards, plugged him. I was like, wow, that's not how this normally goes ever.
Yeah, that is incredible. That doesn't happen very often. I'm going to come hunt with you. I'm just going to walk around behind you.
Dude, that's what she does. It's fun.
Okay, I guess I'm gonna be third in line then.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you right now, with those days, our luck will have it that like you come out and it's fucking 10 days into it and you're like, dude, we haven't even seen a grouse yet. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this happens. Like, it's, there are days where
three days
into it and you're like, there's not even Tweety birds around. Like, what is going on?
I've been on those elk hunts. I think I'm 0-5 with my bow and 2-3 with my rifle. So
yeah.
I'm okay. I definitely understand it's hunting, not shooting, but no, that's been awesome. And it's been super fun hearing like how you guys hunt together and just the whole Montana life. I mean, it kind of makes a flatlander like myself a little jealous that we don't live there, but obviously we get some cool things too, like more than two lakes.
Yeah. I mean, it is a lot of fun to have somebody that like, obviously you want to spend the rest of your life with, and then she enjoys doing what you do and is willing to do like the miserable sacrifice of hikes and bullshit and, you know, deadfall and all that. And at the end of the day, you're like, oh, we didn't kill one, but like, we had a lot of fun. Like, we heard them, we were hiking around, we got to spend a lot of time together. It's a blessing for sure.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to start bringing my wife out. We've been married for 10 months. So everything is new, so it's really exciting. But I'm excited to start our next new adventure of hunting the West together, because I think she's gonna love it, just because she loves hiking and doing all the stuff. So
yeah, it's a good experience, and like, she seems like she's driven. You know, you've got her on the hook now. She's like, I want to kill deer all the time. So if you get her chasing bulls and cows, I'm sure she'll be pumped.
I hope she has like your luck when I start bringing her out and she just walks around and just whacks and stacks them.
Yeah. I mean, some people just have luck, dude. Like, I know a lot of people just like, oh yeah, my wife went out one time and she saw this like 190 inch mule deer and shot it. I'm like, motherfucker, how?
Like, yeah. I've been lucky too. I've gotten a couple once in a lifetime tags, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for. My next dream hunt would be a moose tag. I've been applying for Maine and New Hampshire since I was like 12 years old and never drawn. And I've been applying here for the last 5 years, never drawn. I'm sure it'll be, you know, when I'm 75, can barely walk around, somebody's going to push me around in a wheelchair, I'll draw it. But
I'm thinking about doing the DIY Alaska moose eventually. I think it's going to take a long time to get all the things in place, like, very comfortable hunting with grizzly bears, very comfortable doing 10 days in the woods. I mean, all these things, the logistics. But I think the DIY Alaska is probably going to be my way, because I don't have 70 grand to get a Yukon outfitter. So,
yeah, me either.
So, but awesome. Well, thank you for being here, Tyler, kind of sharing your guys' story. I think the next time we do this, I'll have to make sure both you and your fiance are available, because it sounds like she's got just as many adventures and stories as you do. So it'd be really cool to have her on the next episode as well.
For sure. Yeah, whenever you are in town, give us a call. We're always willing.
Sounds good. Well, I'll take you up on that if I'm ever in Western Montana. And until then, good luck with the rest of your fall, and make sure you tell Savannah the same.
Will do. You too. Good luck with your flute pot. Hope you slam a big one.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be awesome. So, well, thanks for being here once again, and thank you for listening, folks.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.